Coming up next Wednesday on the 17th, author Biz Robbins will be presenting her book at the Ketchikan Public Library. That book is called Life Jacket, a memoir of a float camp teacher. And Biz joins us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Maria.
Thank you very much for being here. And as always, the first question, the obvious question, why did you decide to write a book? A memoir, really.
Well, it's a lifestyle that has disappeared. It doesn't exist anymore. And at the time I was living on the floats, it was the perfect lifestyle for me. I needed help after my husband died. And teaching alone on a float camp gave me that help. It's hard. The people were so good. And the environment, the physical environment, the natural environment all helped to kind of soothe my soul.
And you were a teacher in Colorado.
Yes.
Where your husband also was a teacher. And one day, I love this quote right in the preface of the book. He comes up to you and says, I'm moving to Alaska. Do you want to come with me?
That's exactly. After supper one night. Yes.
So how, I mean, was that said in a very serious manner? Kind of, is he a joking kind of guy? I mean, how did you take that when he said that?
I took it very seriously. He had moved. We had met when he was teaching in the same elementary school I was. And he had moved to high school. He was a certified high school teacher. And something had happened that day during a fire drill. The way that the administration had treated some of the teachers and the kids. And he was upset. And he wanted to give up teaching. And so, and he followed that with, you know, I've always been drawn to Alaska. But marrying you kept me here because I was very happy. I didn't want to leave. So he gave me 2 years to think about it while he quit teaching and restored a Model A.
Oh, so you did not move right away. It was a delay in that.
No, he knew that I needed time to be uprooted, I think.
Okay. And how was that, uprooting and moving to Alaska? What was that experience like? What did you expect, I guess, it to be?
I didn't have any expectations. It was... My marriage to Don was filled with surprises in many ways, and watching him grow and kind of take to take to Alaska helped me grow and take to Alaska too.
And it sounds, in reading your book, it sounds often that, I don't want to say that you were a follower, but you were happy that he was happy.
Yes, I was a follower.
you were a follower.
I followed him
and
up
I guess
here.
I don't think of you, knowing you now, I don't think of you as a follower. You seem like a very independent individual. But at the time, you know, and things change. And after you mentioned his death, and after his death, you had to become, I guess, more resourceful.
I did become independent. It's a process when you're part of a couple and then become single, especially when, like me, you were a follower and you expected your husband to deal with the frozen pipes and the trips to and from town and things like that when you were in a teaching situation. And so the camp personnel kind of became my substitute after Don died and I moved to the smaller camp. They helped me in this world of men in a logging camp become single.
And it was it's very different, I think, than the school lifestyle you would think of in a larger town. The season was different also, wasn't it? Because it was the summer logging camps, but then winter you would actually be elsewhere.
The winter breaks were much longer, yes, because the logging would shut down. The summer breaks were shorter, but there were summer breaks.
And the bulk of your students would be kids whose parents worked in logging camp, or was it a variety of children that you taught?
No, I was in three different logging camps. The first one was a large one that contained a road construction company and a logging company. And children from parents who worked there came to the school, only those children. In the first float camp I taught at, there too were only the children from the loggers. But the third one, when it was located in Dora Bay in Chomley Sound, there were two families. One family lived across the bay, and they either boated or helicoptered to school. And the other family lived about 5 miles away on an island, and they boated to school because we were the, you know, the public school classroom where the kids did not have to be homeschooled. So in that situation, they were not loggers' kids.
And when you first, you and your husband first went to the camps, he was teaching and you initially were not, but then were able to become a teacher. And what is that like, I guess, teaching in one of these camps? Because you're teaching kids of a variety of ages. It's like one of those, you know, country schoolhouses.
It is a country
that's floating.
yes, that's the only difference. And the population comes from a very local source. It was the lure of Labrashire Bay that made my husband go back to teaching, because it's located so far away from Ketchikan, and the school district administration was in Ketchikan. And at the time, the only way to contact the teachers was either by marine radio, or if you wanted to see them, by float plane or boat. So you were, as a teacher, largely on your own.
You had a great amount of freedom.
Yes.
In many ways, and could make, I guess, a variety of decisions on your own.
Yes. Yes, one really nice quality I found when I was teaching by myself was that I got to construct the environment by my expectations and my punishments for what the kids did, if you will. And also the parents are so close. And once you get their support, teaching is really a positive experience, and I don't know that teachers have that freedom today.
And it's definitely a very different experience living in a logging camp and very close-knit community, in a sense. You don't have, you know, you can't drive to town and go to movies or do whatever. It sounds like lived without TV and radio for much of the time or anything like that. So really, social life was a big part of camp, I imagine.
I'm thinking about how to answer that, because one of the first friends I made out at Labrashire Bay was a gal from Vietnam who had met her husband during the war. And she was telling me that I had to be very careful with whom I made friends, because so many of the women sat at home all day and had coffee and gossiped. And so I was quite careful as far as that went.
Because it's definitely a small town.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So like living in a small town where everybody knows your business. So
yes,
one needs to be a little careful. Interesting.
Yes.
But also people helped each other. You had lots of bake sales, things to raise money for different activities and things. And it sounds like people were really there and willing to lend a helping hand if their neighbors needed help.
That's true. The school was a focal point in the community, and everybody, even the bunkhouse guys who had no children, were interested in helping us go on field trips or raise money for track meets, transportation, or to get high school jackets, whatever we needed to raise money for. They were very helpful.
Something that was very instrumental in your ability to write this book was the fact that your mother-in-law had saved all of the letters that you wrote to her.
Yes.
And you were able to, how were you able to get those back? And when did you get them?
After she died.
And about what year was that roughly? That you wrote up till, I believe, 1991, somewhere within there?
Well, yes. That's when Dawn died. She died maybe 2 years later, about in 1993, I think.
So then you had them since then. And use them as part of this book.
They were great help to spur my memory for things that I had forgotten that had happened, yes.
And you're very honest in this book. You talk about the happy times, the funny times, as well as the difficult times.
Yes.
And when your husband was diagnosed with cancer, you worked hard traveling, trying to seek cures, trying to help him. And it sounds also, just in reading the book, that he was tough, I guess, if that didn't want to really show his illness, was still piloting the boat, was still doing a lot of work, although I imagine his health was deteriorating.
Well, it was, but not to the extent that I have watched other deteriorating health people. And I feel very fortunate that he did not need to be hospitalized until the last week of his life. But it was one of my writers, one of the gals in my writing group had somebody dear to her that was struggling with cancer at the time I was writing that. And when I would write something that we'd, oh, yeah, that's what cancer patients do. Oh, yeah, that's what their caregivers do. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. So I'm hoping that people can find a sense of empathy, or maybe it's not so bad, or, oh, yeah, everybody goes through that kind of thing in it.
So what was that transition like? You said you were a follower, you went along with your husband, then he passes away. How did you cope? How did you, rebuild your life?
I don't know. That book was an effort to try to find out, I think. It just happened. And it slowly, I don't remember much. He died in March, and I finished the first year alone. And then I don't remember much about that. And then I went back knowing that I had the support of two very strong women in camp. And I think that's what initially helped me get through.
And also in it, you write that teaching was a big part of getting through, too. That your students definitely.
Oh, yes. Yes, those students were awesome. They did what I asked. I mean, they really wanted to please. They wanted to succeed. They wanted us all to feel good.
Okay. And do you have any maybe quick, short, maybe funny incident you could share of life in the early days in camp?
I don't know about funny. I know we would run out of things and have to borrow from people. I remember running out of, there was a storm, and we were expected to house all the artists that the state sent around that time. And there was a storm, and we had these two guys for an extra 3 days before they could leave, and we ran out of toilet paper. So I had to send, that's when Don was alive. I sent him around to ask for toilet paper, and people were real happy to give it to us. But I don't remember. Oh, I remember one time, this one student. I noticed your nasturtiums outside the studio today, and once I found they were edible, I really liked the taste. They're kind of like radishes. And every year I would bring back to camp in maybe April some nasturtium seeds because we could plant them and give them to the kids' mothers for Mother's Day. And I would, the first time I told them that they were edible, And the mothers would plant them in their planters outside their trailer houses. First time I told the students they were edible, the next day there were no nasturtiums in the plant because this one kid had gone around, plucked them all and eaten them.
Wow. That's a lot of nasturtiums.
I know, but they don't have many calories.
Well, that's true. And you must like that radishy flavor. It is. They are delicious.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. We'll have to watch out for the ones out front.
I know.
Yeah, and it's interesting, as you mentioned, this is capturing a time when, you know, logging was ongoing, people were living out at these camps, and it is something that is lost. So it is interesting reading your memoir just of how things function daily in the camps and just kind of understanding that as well.
Thank you. It takes a while to get to that part, but thank you.
later in the book. And what I think you mentioned a lot of it, but what are you hoping people will gain from this?
I'm hoping they gain an understanding and appreciation of the people who were out there, who worked very hard. And the lifestyle was not always that easy. And yet, they work together so well, too, in many cases. It's just a lifestyle that I thought was good.
And then you made a decision to move to Ketchikan.
Yes.
And how was that transition from several years being out in a camp and now being in a town?
It was fine. I think I was ready. I had been coming into Ketchikan twice a month on a weekend and forming friendships. A lot of the itinerants lived in Ketchikan, and so I knew them from when the special ed teacher especially. And I had made friends during the summers when we lived here. And at one point, early on, Don wanted to build a geodesic dome, and so we didn't teach all the time. And during that time, I worked at the Silver Thimble, or I was with another gal in a gift shop. So I did have other experiences that allowed me to form a support group here before I actually moved in.
Okay, and you now are still an educator?
Yes.
What are you up to now?
Right now, it's been interesting. I'm teaching two classes at the university. As soon as I came in from camp, I was offered a job at the university teaching ESL classes. And that transformed into teaching an English class, and now it's also a math class. And then a friend and I volunteer and teach an ESL class for adults down at the job center. So yes, I'm still teaching, but maybe not for much longer.
Okay. And any other thoughts about writing additional books or...
Right now, I'm trying to get this book into the hands of other booksellers. And to do that, I have to write letters of that will induce them to want to carry the book. And so that's what I'm writing right now. There may be other camp experiences. In this book, I skip over one float camp, the big Gildersleeve float camp, because things were good. And they weren't so new anymore. And so I concentrate. It's almost like two books. The first part is the newness of Alaska, and the second part is after my husband died. So.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for joining me. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you very much. Biz Robbins, again, her book, Life Jacket, a memoir of a float camp teacher. She will be making a presentation at the Ketchikan Public Library next Wednesday, the 17th.